right. Well, here we are. To dream again. To dare again. To feel enjoyment and happiness again. Or for the first time. To realize this is living. Be inspired. To see your life as an exciting journey of discovery. With your host of the Inspire Possibility Show, Mark Susna.
Hey everybody, this is Mark Susnell. You're listening to the Inspire Possibility Show, the show that makes a difference, that inspires us, that gets us to think about things that maybe we don't normally think about. And, you know, a lot of times we have a dream and we're living our dream or we get caught up in a movement and we're part of it and we don't really think about other things. But sometimes there's something gnawing at us. We know there's something else for us. There's a bigger picture. And there's somebody I've known for a long time who is Dave Goetz. He's a drummer for Big Brother and the Holding Company. And what I really respect about Dave and admire is that he keeps evolving. So the person he was way back when, that's part of him, but he's much more now. And I thought you might find his path very interesting, his journey. And so I welcome my friend Dave Goetz to the Inspire Possibility Show. So thanks for joining me, Dave.
You're welcome, Mark.
Yeah. So, you know, in your evolution, here you are, you're involved in the whole 60s music scene and one of the names, one of the legends in a very popular band, Big Brother and the Holding Company. And was this always a goal of yours? Is this something that you always wanted to do, just to be in a rock and roll band, or what? How did you get there?
No.
How did you get there? What motivated you?
It wasn't a goal of mine. In fact, I didn't want to be a musician, although I started playing in bands when I was quite young. I mean, I was, 14, 15. I was asked to be in a band. I didn't even play the drums, but I had good rhythm, and I was involved in something else that where I had to play a drum. I was involved in Indian dancing, Native American dancing. And some kids in junior high school saw me performing this thing as a dancer with my Indian costume. And I had to play the drum, and they thought I had good rhythm. And they just asked me to be the drummer in a band they were starting. This was a long time ago, 1955.
Whoa.
And so I started just playing the drums, and I could do it really from the beginning, and I was pretty good. I was a sort of a natural, and I all through my teen years, I played in bands, and I played in hotels in the summertime and all of that, and I really saw a certain lifestyle that I didn't like, that being a musician in this particular time, in this particular place that I lived, which was Brooklyn, New York, being that kind of a musician was being sort of part of the servant class, I would say. So you were, you weren't treated well being a musician. There was no glamour in it. It was more like what we used to call klezma, that kind of thing, It was like an itinerant life in a way. Although guys, made a living doing it, and there were some really great players and really great musicians. But basically, I loved to play music, but the lifestyle turned me off. So I didn't want to be a musician, so I went and studied art. I wanted to be an artist, and that's a whole other story. But basically, that's what I did. I went to art school, and I really didn't play drums for a long time. I played occasionally in bands and, at art school, people would get together who played instruments, and I would play in these bands with other artists.
How old were you in the art school?
Well, it was from about the time I was, 20 to the time I was 26. I really didn't play that much. I just was going to art school, and I was, you know, I did other things. I went to Europe when I was 24. Between the time I was 24 and 25, I went to Europe and I lived in Poland for a while. And when I was in Poland, I started playing drums again because, again, it was the same kind of situation. I was there as a painter, but one day I sat in at a jazz club and all of a sudden people started asking me to, you know, to be in their band and be the drummer. So I started doing that again. But when I came back from Poland, then I started teaching art. And I really was, that was on, my career path was really to be an artist and to be a painter. And I sort of saw myself as teaching art at the college level and all of that. And then the thing that came along in the mid, late 60s, the whole psychedelic scene and counterculture revolution that happened in San Francisco, I kind of fell into that. And suddenly I was playing drums again. But it was a different kind of a thing. Instead of being a servant or, you know, part of the servant class, you were now part of the elite class. It was like you were really respected and admired and idolized, in fact, as a rock musician. So there was a lot more glamour to it for me. But that wasn't my plan.
So when you had, when this, what was that like for you to kind of have this, let's say, lifestyle, this glamour that you talked about, this stardom, in your 27, 28 at this time?
26, 27, 28, yeah.
Yeah. So what was that like for you?
Well, it was an incredible time, you know. It was an amazing time that really in some way, I would say it affected my life permanently. It was what we call a seminal time in my life, in that just the way you even introduced me, you said, you know, the drummer with Big Brother and the Holding Company, and even though I'm now 77 years old, and I'm still the drummer with Big Brother and the Holding Company, but I've done a lot of other things in my life, but that is, you know, that's kind of what's going to go on my tombstone.
Exactly.
And I know that.
I know.
And I knew that when I was 28, actually. That's the interesting thing about it. It was particularly a time, I think during that time, I think a lot of people who were involved in it, you could almost say this will be a time that will be remembered in history. It's a very important time, and we knew we were in it. You know, we knew we were at the crest of that wave, part of the zeitgeist that was happening. But you also there was an awareness that it was historical, and that this might be a time in your life that nothing else will ever be like it again. So it was very exciting, and it was, you know, not all happiness and fun. It was, you know, there were a lot of things going on. But in the beginning,
it was a lot of tragedy.
But I would say in the beginning, when it first started out, it was a love fest, and there was a lot of love, and there was a lot of discovery, and a lot of excitement, and a lot of good things, and a lot of hope that, you know, that we would kind of change the world, or that the world was changing in a good way, and that, you know, a new consciousness was arising. And there was a lot of hope for that. So it was exciting, you know, to be part of that.
Right. And like a lot of people, you're caught up in this movement, but there's also this feeling there's something more that I need to experience other than that. And I know from talking to you, it's important for people to get. You're so much more than just being a rock musician. And I guess at that point in your life, you say, you know what, there's something else for me to explore. And so was there a turning point for you when you said, I need to look into other things?
I would say there was definitely a period of time at the end of the 60s into the 70s when it was apparent that things were falling apart, that some of the hopes and ideals were not, you know, not being realized, or, you know, were going in another direction. Things started to go south. And same thing in my own life, that also started to happen. after, you know, when Big Brother sort of achieved this peak, and then, of course, Janis left the band. This is all kind of known history in music.
Right.
And at a certain point, we started to continue on in the early 70s, but, you know, people were using drugs. Two of the guys in the band were strung out, and that started to fall apart. And, you know, all of these things were happening. My marriage fell apart, partly because of the lifestyle I was living. I was still living this
right.
rock and roll lifestyle, and it didn't jive with the marriage I was also trying to have, trying to have a permanent marriage with children and a home and all of that. And at the same time, I was still drawn to sort of the other side of things, you know. But anyway, that was probably a period of time that lasted about 5 or 6 years for me. And I really did feel like I had to not only get better as a musician, if I was going to continue as a musician, just not part of a movement necessarily, or part of
right.
a wave of music, but really just being a professional musician and being able to play all kinds of music. So I began to work on myself in that way. And I think also coming out of the whole kind of drug culture of the 60s, there was a feeling that there was something else. There was some, you know, kind of spiritual search that was necessary, that was required if one were one was going to grow
right.
spiritually.
Right.
So that began to sort of happen to me in the early 70s, in 73 and 74, and I got involved with some stuff like that, really spiritual growth and
right.
change.
And that's what we have in common. We're both come out of that era.
Yeah, I think
and
so.
This
I
idea
think
there's something yearning inside us that we know there's more. And I think that that whole movement with psychedelics were the first step. And I know
mm-hmm.
for me led to meditation. And I'm curious what your first step was after the psychedelics was, and after the band was kind of breaking up. What was the first thing you did to kind of deepen your spiritual path?
Well, the first thing you have to do is hit bottom in some way,
mm-hmm.
you know. I think you have to hit
mm-hmm.
a bottom to make it, to make the whole thing meaningful. I think that's part of the journey. I mean, I really think
right.
I really believe that. I think that's necessary, that you have to hit a bottom with what you're doing and seeing that it, you know, doesn't work.
Uh-huh.
And then
right.
then you have to,
I mean,
you know,
you
then,
think
th-
you
then
think
if,
everybody
if you're lucky, what?
Uh-huh. You think
what
that everybody needs to experience bottom to have the spiritual journey?
I don't know about everybody. I mean, I don't want to like kind of use generalities like that, but for myself
right.
and for a lot of
yeah.
people that I've known, that mm-hmm. has been part of the impetus to grow. As to, you know, to hit bottom, I think it's important in some ways for a lot of people to
mm-hmm.
get to that place where they're willing to change, where they really want to change, where
right.
they feel like they have to change, that there's some kind of pain, there's some kind of, you know, some kind of discomfort that they just can't live with anymore, and that happened to me, and then I went and hit another bottom again. You know, it's funny because it doesn't sometimes it happens over a long period of time. I
right.
went on a whole spiritual search, and then in my own life, somewhere in the late 70s, I really, really got back into drugs, really got
uh-huh.
back into drugs in almost like a deeper way than, you know, than before. And then I had to really hit another bottom. And then I had, you know, really what was important to me at the end of the 70s and the beginning of the 80s was sobriety. And
mm-hmm.
that was a very important thing for me personally, because I had to,
right. well,
I had to spend the next 15 years not doing any drugs or alcohol or anything, you know, something. And then there was another level of spiritual growth that happened during that time. You know.
I always say that, you know, when you allow yourself to feel that deep pain, it also
mm-hmm.
expands your ability to experience joy. That's something mm-hmm. I felt. I feel that.
I think that's
true. You know,
true.
My ability to experience that, joy at this point in my life is greater than ever. Do you have that same experience?
Yes, I would say so. I can't think of, you know, I give you an example of that, but definitely,
right.
I think the...
Just a feeling, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That real
sense
of... Yeah, I feel
a lot of joy later when, in the early 80s, when my wife and I decided to have a family, to really create another... I had a family. I had a family, you know, I started a family at the end of the 60s, and that marriage,
right.
you know, crashed hard. And I didn't mm-hmm. get the chance, really, in some way to experience being a dad and having that family. I was estranged from it for many years. And then later in my life, in the 80s, my second wife and I, we were both in our 40s, and we made this decision to start a family. And it was like a great joy in it that probably I never had before or couldn't have had before because, you know, of all the other factors that were preventing me from experiencing that.
Well, you know, there's something you said earlier that kind of piqued my interest, and mm-hmm. you said that on your tombstone you kind of accepted there'd be this drummer for Big Brother and the Holding Company.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There would be on there because of your background and
mm-hmm.
your career. What
mm-hmm.
would you want to write on your tombstone?
No, I have to just tell you something funny for a second, because I had a conversation one night with Ray Manzarek from The Doors. We were both playing.
Uh-huh.
Big Brother was playing in Seattle at something called the Experience Music Project. It was it's like kind of their Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Seattle.
Uh-huh.
And Ray Manzarek was doing a solo thing with Michael McClure, the poet. And we
right.
were sitting backstage, and I didn't know Ray at all, but we just happened to be sitting on the couch together, and we had a great conversation. And he came up with this phrase. He was talking about his own feeling of being in The Doors, having been part of The Doors, which was such a successful rock group, and trying to do something else in his musical career, trying to go other places. And he said, it's kind of like the golden albatross. And what he meant by that was that it's an albatross. It's hanging around your neck, and people will always know you as he was the keyboard player with The Doors. But at the same time, he
uh-huh.
realized that it was gold. It was like it allowed him in some way to go out and continue to work and make money and live,
right.
you know, a pretty comfortable life. So then it's the same thing. So I love that phrase about it, that
uh-huh.
it's sort of with Big Brother. It was not quite as golden as his, but it's been, you know, it's been
uh-huh.
something that has allowed me to live in Marin County and
mm-hmm.
play music. And for many times in my life, I've been able to do things that don't pay me money, but that I've done for other reasons and, you know, musical reasons or aesthetic reasons
right.
or things like that, or volunteer for things that, you know, because I haven't had the pressures that some people have just to survive, just to make a living. Although
mm-hmm.
I've had periods in my life when I have had to just survive, and I've gone out and when I was 46 years old, I went out and worked in a restaurant in a kitchen as a pantry chef for $5 an hour because I was completely
wow.
broke. And that was like, you know, something that I'm happy about now. I wasn't happy about it at the time, but I was completely broke, and I had no choice. I had no option. I had to go out and do those
and were you
things
mar-
like
were
that.
Were you married then when you did that?
I was
did
married,
you?
And I had a wife
yeah.
that was 8 months pregnant. That's what
wow.
I'm saying. It was like we were living in L.A.,
wow.
and all of a sudden certain things happened, and we had no money.
Right.
And
yeah.
just walked into a restaurant and said, I want a job. And they said, have you worked in restaurants before? And I said, Well, when I was in art school, I ran the cafeteria at the San Francisco Art Institute. And they said, well, that was 20 years ago. I said, yeah, but my father was actually in the restaurant business, and I sort of grew up in it, which was true. And they said, well, that's important. That counts for something. We'll give you a job, and we'll put you with all the Mexican guys on the, you know, cutting up vegetables and chopping onions and stuff like that, and we'll see how you do. And so I did that. I did that for pretty much 10 months of my life until something else happened and some money came in and I could quit, and Joan had our daughter, and we moved back up. This is in L.A., and we moved back up to Marin County and started a whole life again at that age, at 47. Restarted the band Big Brother and the holding company and all of that. And all of those are great experiences in life, and those are part of it. So the answer to your question is
I was just going to bring you back to that. I go, this guy's really good at avoiding questions.
No. I don't want to spin it too much. But at the same time, I want to, you know, sort of point out that it hasn't been like a free ride from 1968 on, having been the drummer with Big Brother and Holding Company. It's been a journey, and it's had real ups and downs. But mostly what I've tried to do during that time is I tried to teach, I've tried to paint, I've tried to make art. And, I feel a little bit unrecognized as an artist. I felt like in some way the fact that I was a rock and roll musician has prevented me from being recognized for my art, which I feel I've always felt that my art is on a really high level, you know, a level. I came out of the San Francisco Art Institute in the 60s during a time when my contemporaries and the people that I was new and hanging out with, most of them went on to, you know, internationally famous art careers. And I was sort of part of that world, and I kind of blew it off for many years. But I was one of the star people in that world. I was, considered an up-and-coming, I don't know what you call it, a young Turk, whatever you want to say. I was a person of great talent, a recognized talent in the art world. And the fact that I've been a rock and roll musician in some way has prevented me from being looked at seriously as an artist. So, you know, if it's going to be on my tombstone, I would like to have something like Dave Getz was a musician and an artist, and did some other things too. You know, you could say I was a drummer with, you know, Janis Joplin's drummer, and that's important. That culturally had a big impact. But I would like to be recognized for my art. I would like to be recognized for my teaching, and hopefully someday I'm going to be recognized for my writing, which I'm doing now. But that I haven't put that out in the world yet, right. So there's no reason for me to be recognized for it, you know. But I have tried to put my art out in the world for the last, 40, 50 years, and it's been hard. It became harder and harder because of the rock and roll thing. Because of you're just not taken seriously just as an artist. You're a rock and roll musician who happens to do art, and I'm not that. I'm actually not that. I'm actually an artist who does rock and roll.
Wow.
I know.
That's profound. What if you, back to this, I don't know why I'm fixed on this tombstone thing. I guess because you brought it up.
Yeah, I brought it up.
But what if you could write on your tombstone if you couldn't put anything about music on it? What would you put? Father, spirit. I mean, what would you put? I know you definitely art would be artist, but what else? What else? What else about you that you want people to know about you?
Well, I don't know, Mark. I think drumming is probably. I think of drumming as an art form. It's a human art form. It's really an expression of rhythm. And rhythm is, as Rudolf Steiner said, the carrier of life. Life is rhythm, and pulse is life, and all of that. And so I really take drumming seriously as an art form. I've tried to get, I'm still trying to get better at it. You know, I still practice.
Wow.
I still play, you know, a few hours every day. I sit at a drum set. I sit
wow.
at a drum pad. I teach drumming. I like to think of drumming as more than just kind of, he was a rock and roll drummer. I like to think of it.
Uh-huh.
I'd like to think of somebody who kind of really got deeply into the expression of rhythm, and, you know, I like what Mickey Hart did with drumming. I really respect that, you know. He brought the consciousness of drumming as an art form to a lot of people in our world, you know. And I used to know Mickey pretty well back in the early 70s. We hung out together. I don't know him really much anymore. But he came out with a book back in, I think the 80s or something like that, called Drumming. The Edge of Magic or something like that. Anyway, it really opened a lot of people up to drumming and what the possibilities of drumming are. So anyway, I mean, that's if you're just asking me about music, I'm not a great player of I play a little bit of piano. I don't ever play guitar. I've never learned how to play guitar. I understand music. I know chords. I know a little bit of music theory. I'm not really a guy who considers myself really deeply knowledgeable about melodic music and the music theory and things like that. But as far as rhythm goes and drumming, I have explored it, and I have spent a lot of time in my life listening to all kinds of expressions of rhythm from different cultures and things like that. And, I'd like that side of me to be known, you know. I'd like to do more with
that. Well, I've known
you
as a, you know, in many different ways. And what would be your message to other people? I know you've done a lot of, I know you did the Eureka training, which is a very intense, transformative experience. I know you've done things like that. I don't know what other things you've done, but I'm sure there are many more, because I'm learning, you know, today a lot about you that I didn't know. What would be your message to other people? What would be your message if your message about life to other people? What would Dave Getz say? Now,
keep
this
breathing.
Wouldn't be on your tombstone. This could be a painting you did, and you could have a message if you did a painting, let's say, with a message you wrote on the painting. What would that be?
You know, I just don't really know the answer to that. I think there's, I don't know if there is an answer to that. I just don't know, Mark. It's too profound. I'm not sure. You know, in terms of religion and spirituality, I believe in something. You know, I believe in something that I've seen and experienced, and I believe that there's a lot that we can't see that goes on in the universe. There's you know, forces at work. I don't know. There's a life force. Let me put it that way. I believe that there's a life force that permeates everything. And I think the more in touch, the more connected to that one can be, the more meaning your life has. Maybe that's probably it for me. So whatever connects you to that, if you know, I mean, some people can look at a puppy and feel that, maybe, you know.
Right.
Some people might, you know, nature, they might, you know, go out in nature and experience that feeling, that connection. I don't know, you know, but whatever it is that connects you to that life force, I think is what it's about.
And every, as you say, everybody has their own way to do that.
Drumming for me is that that's part of the meaning for it for me, is that it connects me.
So we just got a prompt. We have 90 seconds left in our conversation, and I just want to thank you for having this conversation on the Inspire Possibility Show.
Thanks for asking me. It's always, it's always, whenever we talk, we always sort of go in these directions, which is great, which is why I like talking to you, you know. You always bring that part out, so that's good.
Yeah, yeah, and I just what we appreciate about each other, and for being our guest on the Inspire Possibility Show, I'm going to give you a copy of my new book, The Soul of Uncertainty, and I think you'll enjoy it. And I again thank you for this conversation, and I know that hopefully it's got you thinking about some things that maybe you haven't expressed before, and do that in a different direction. And to our listeners out there, you've been listening to the Inspire Possibility Show. Dave Getz, the original drummer and only drummer for Big Brother and the Holding Company, has been in conversation with us. And as you know, every week we have some amazing people that are blessing our show. And until next week, journey on.
You've been listening to Inspire Possibility Show with Mark Susnow. To learn more about Mark Susnow, go to InspirePossibility.com and click on the contact button. Schedule a complimentary visit with Mark or email him at mark@inspirepossibility.com. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine.